Hi, everybody. This is Andrew with the Pay Per Click podcast. I'm always delightfully joined by Josh. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you this afternoon?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good. So normally before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the podcast, we have a little bit of small talk. And today I was thinking we're going to talk about something very office-oriented. Coffee. What's up with coffee? What's going on with coffee these days? Are you still drinking coffee? Do you like the stimulant caffeine? Josh, I'm gonna move the question to you. How does coffee make you feel?
Yeah, well, honestly, it doesn't make me feel anything. I feel like caffeine is one of those things that at some point in your adult life you've consumed so much of that it just turns into something that keeps you from getting a headache when you don't have it in your body. I'm a big fan of coffee. I'm a big fan of dark roast coffee. Right now, there's it's like Pioneer 1886 or something I got from Walmart. That's a light roast coffee. It's delicious. I had a French press for a while, but lately I've really been into pour overs.
I need to get into that game, the pour over game. Right now, I'm still on the French press kind of binge, but I like the idea of one day moving to pour over.
Yeah, it's a little more time oriented because there's a million ways to do it. Like I just use a coffee filter and a strainer and go for it. But the flavor that you get out of the coffee that way, like letting it have to sit, have to drip out of the bottom of that thing. And then gives it time to marinate, get more of that good coffee flavor in there. Are you a like flavored cream in your coffee kind of guy? Are you two sugars? Do you just drink it black?
I don't like any flavor. I'll take some cream sometimes, but for the most part, I like tasting the bean.
Yeah, I like flavored creamer. But there are times where I'll go out of my way to pay for coffee. Like this is my special coffee that I went out of my way to order from somewhere or like drive to this place to get it where no sugar, no creamer. When I make that coffee, it's specifically because I want to taste the flavor. I want to taste where this thing comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But stuff that I'll get off the shelf, like just go to Walmart and get. I'll throw like some flavored creamer in there. I was a little upset when they ran out of pumpkin spice creamer and I've had to switch over to regular French vanilla creamer. Is that even regular? Is French vanilla a regular creamer or is that a flavor?
It's a staple. So I'm going to say that it's funny. I remember even when we were working over at the agency we were working with,
that was a two pot a day situation over there. I think at least.
We were drinking heavily into the coffee. And then also the creamer that was provided, it was always like regular creamer and then French vanilla. So they go hand in hand. And I like them both. They're appropriate. Some days feels like a French vanilla day. And then other days it's like, nope, we're just going to keep it square. This week's episode of the Pay-Per-Click podcast, we're going to discuss website best practices. So some of the things that we consider when giving advice to people that we work with or agencies that we work with, some of the things that we've seen work in the past, and then some just kind of key insights into what is usually just kind of the baseline that you should build off of. And that leads me to what are some of the things that make a great converting website, Josh?
So to me, a great converting page really comes down to three main things. Number one, is there a clear call to action as soon as the customer hits your page? So I'm sure that you've probably visited a website where you just see a bunch of text at the top of the page, especially from your phone. Other times it might just be a video that doesn't autoplay. And the action that you're meant to take on that site isn't obvious. So the best converting websites that I work with all have forms and phone numbers at the top of the page in both mobile and desktop views. so that no matter what, the first thing that a customer sees is a way to take the action needed to solve the problem that they have. They have some kind of problem that they're trying to solve, whether it's finding a bit of information, whether it's trying to purchase something or to get in contact with somebody. And you need to anticipate that and make sure that the action at the top of the page clearly rectifies that situation. Number two, is there an initial, air quotes, handshake? Is there text or a video at the top of the page that talks about who you are, what you do, where you operate, and what makes you different? Many people looking to take action will visit more than one website. And if they're all related to the same industry, a lot of those sites are going to read more or less the same. So having an initial handshake can help to build a relationship between you and your customer before you even personally make contact with them. The third and last thing, is your website fast and responsive? A slow site can really, it can cost you conversions. A principle that I follow in sales is that if it takes longer than one step or 1 second to complete an action, then you're drastically decreasing the chances of getting a sale. Your website needs to be fast, and the desired action that the customer wants to take and that you want that customer to take needs to be clear and to the point at the top of the page. I feel like those three things, if I take everything that you could possibly do to a website and boil it down to what actually makes conversion happen, it is those three things specifically. So, Andrew, what's your take on it? What are some of the best practices for websites that you work with that convert the best? What is it that you see across the board?
First off, those are some really great tips for landing page best practices. Like you mentioned, having a clear call to action, the initial kind of handshake, air quotes, of course, and having a fast, responsive, and mobile-friendly website are huge when it comes to having a website that converts well and helps PPC. Honestly, that makes up the majority of clients that I've run into. That's where they're usually missing the mark when it comes to having a website or a landing page that's converting well and is reflected in the PPC campaign. I just got off a call with a potential client this week, and reviewing some of those topics were literally word for word almost what I suggested. And a few other things that I'd like to add are keeping the call to action really clear. You know, being concise and above the first fold. Make sure you're doing really the best to match your customer's intent. So one way to think about this is basically answering the question that your customer hasn't even asked yet and being that solution for them. So I'm going to repeat that one more time. So basically answering the question that your customer hasn't even asked you yet and being that solution for them. I think that's a really important piece to the puzzle when it comes to having a high converting website. When you can answer their question immediately right off the bat and make them like, oh, that's right. Like that's exactly what I need. And you're that solution. You got it right there.
And for those people who might be a little bit less tech savvy, above the fold is that part on your web page that you see before having to scroll. So that is the top of your page. So there's the above the fold part on your desktop and then the above the fold part on your mobile device too.
So the next thing I would suggest too is kind of keeping in mind that like less is more. Keeping your form submission above the first fold, like Josh mentioned, which is kind of before you can scroll down on the page, and make it short. Keep the necessary fields under, you know, I always suggest under 4, and, you know, be sure to keep the questions simple and formal. We don't have to vet them as intensely yet. I've seen increases of upwards of 25% or better on conversion pages that are doing this exact thing. So literally just having simple questions, you know, maybe 3 or 4 fields in the form, and then, you know, having that kind of nice transition into just a thank you page going after that. So it's really a balancing act, because although we want to vet as much as possible, we don't want our potential customers to leave due to something as simple as asking them, you know, maybe the wrong question or too many or something like that. So, you know, Josh and I do a really good job of having motivated traffic go to the website. And one of the pieces to the puzzle is them actually submitting the form or reaching out physically with a phone call. And we hand it off to our clients after that. So we're doing our best to have that motivation still kind of play a big part in the way that we target with our keywords and, you know, locations, et cetera. But a pro tip is test out using placeholders in the fields. And this is something that kind of gets thrown by the wayside, but avoid manual entry when possible. So basically, whenever you have a field, and I'm talking about literally like when you see a form on a page, and they're asking for your name and your maybe address and a phone number or something like that, or whichever fields you decide, have something in the actual field as a placeholder. And that's something that one can test. And also it does help with conversion overall, because it's less things that the customer needs to fill out in order to get in contact with you. The last tip that might be something that seems really simple, and this one is super simple, but personally, you know, here on the Pay-Per-Click podcast, we like to make complicated things as simple as possible. So whenever possible, please have your landing page redirect to a thank you page. Once the form has been submitted, this is going to help with so many things. First off, the huge one is conversion tracking. As much as that should be the most important thing, you can actually, you know, put the code on that thank you page. It also gives you the opportunity to re-engage with your customers and offer them, you know, maybe just a suggested time that you're going to follow up, a time frame, you know, like I'll follow up in the next, you know, 5 hours, or, you know, not necessarily that, but like you can also just literally say, thank you for submitting the form. We'll be in contact with you shortly. Those little last touch points are really, they're helpful in the customer journey, and they really, really do help with actually the engagement and them actually becoming a customer for you. But yeah, those are some of the three tips that I would suggest. I think Josh brought up really, really great tips as well. Having all of those put together is a really strong way to start off your campaign. It kind of leads us to the next question, which is there's always this, you know, you'll come across some marketers who are feeling really strongly about either side of this, but do you feel that squeeze pages are just as effective as websites, in your opinion?
So this actually comes up quite a bit in conversation with customers asking what the best route to go with is when setting up a domain. Do they want a squeeze page? Do they want a website? A lot of people don't know that a squeeze page and a website are different. A squeeze page is really just a term for any page that you're sending traffic to that doesn't have navigation at the top. It only serves one purpose. That's people land on it, they either take the action or they leave that page. That's it. In real estate investing, I don't really feel that I've never had a squeeze page that's outperformed a full website. If you follow the best practices that we laid out earlier, I think you could find some success up front with the squeeze page. But over time, you're going to start losing out on an entire subset of people who require additional information. This is the kind of information that you get from an about page that talks about how long you've been in business, maybe humanizes you more by talking about your family or other places that you've worked, how you got into real estate investing, or a how it works page that goes through however many steps it is that your process is and gives people an idea of what to expect in greater detail than what you might have listed out on a squeeze page. So your homepage should always be set up to convert that hot traffic up front, but there is a genuine value in having that additional info present on other pages. In addition to that, if you have a squeeze page set up, you're missing out on the opportunity to use site link extensions effectively with your Google Ads campaign, because you don't have a how it works page or a contact page to help to flesh out that ad text that's showing up at the top of page number one, where you have three other competitors up there who have site link extensions that show up there that buy up a lot more real estate at the top of that page. So you're missing out on subsets of traffic that are looking for more information, but you're also missing out on the opportunity to effectively use one of Google's highest click converting extensions, the site links.
That's a really good point too, with when it comes to squeeze pages, your inaccessibility to have site links, which is a really, really important factor to, you know, increasing click through rate on your ads and just getting more engagement. I've had success with both. I can definitely say that for some industries, squeeze pages just seem to have a better conversion rate, especially for like self-help or like seminars or like instructional class signups and stuff like that. And it seems like those cheesy countdown timers just nail down on conversions for some, you know, some audiences. And I've worked with agencies that like specifically just drive that type of traffic, but having that pass-through conversion and that nurture-based campaign can kind of help drive metrics in the right direction. But for the most part, when it comes to, you know, what I do now, which is, you know, the kind of more, you know, hardball kind of lead generation aspect of things, and I side with Josh here as well. I prefer having an actual website and directing them to a page that is maybe not necessarily a squeeze page, but maybe like a landing page is okay. The more that you test it, you'll notice that in some cases, especially for real estate, it seems like if you have a solid homepage, I know this is almost counterintuitive to a lot of what other PPC analysts will suggest, that you need to have a specific landing page that's you know, super oriented around the keyword and stuff like that. And I agree with that for the most part, but from market to market, having a solid homepage and directing traffic to that, it can really nail down your conversion rate and help increase that reflective in your Google Ads campaign. Because honestly, Google and more importantly, customers are getting more and more aware of the entire process and experience of literally just engaging with a website. And it's a huge factor that makes having an effective and like informative, well laid out website much more reliable when it comes to helping the customer and driving conversion, which is ultimately the goal at the end of the day.
Another common question that I get has to do with domains. Andrew, do you think that the right domain name can make or break a website's performance?
No, I can say that with
good confidence. Answer.
Yeah, a website domain, for the most part, I mean, no, it has nothing to do with how your website's going to perform. Thankfully, it was long ago that you know, basically stuffing keywords onto your website into like every nook and cranny would actually lead to more conversion. But
that was about a full 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was. You're exactly right. Yeah, it has very little impact when it comes to you know, the performance of your website. Keep it within the realms of reality when choosing like a domain for your business. But for the most part, names are, you know, they're pretty moot when it comes, you know, in 2021 and beyond.
So I'm going to go about halfway in the opposite direction and say maybe. So the domain name informs your customers a lot on what it is that they're getting into upfront. So the example that I use in real estate investing is somebody that has a more marketing-based domain name versus their business name. I know a lot of investors will base their business name off of something that has nothing to do with houses, maybe like Rumpelstiltskin LLC. It just things that have nothing to do with it that are legal business entities. And so they'll use that as a domain name because they want their business completely reflected in the domain name and then in the website that they're sending traffic to. I'm not going to say that that is going to make or break website performance, but if you have something that says Sell My House Fast Georgia or Cash for Houses DC, We Buy Houses Alaska, if you have a domain name that's more marketing based and informs the customer on what it is that they're getting into before they even click over to the site, you stand a better chance of getting that click because the domain name matches with the text that shows up around the ad and even the organic result that's popping up. So you can rank a website regardless of what the name of that domain name is, but I believe you stand a higher chance to get the actual click on your website if the domain name is more informative to what the service is. I've tested it a lot in real estate investing over the years, and most customers end up switching to a marketing-based domain name just to kind of stick with what they see the best practice being. But for the ones that use a business name versus a marketing-based name, at least with pay-per-click and Google Ads, there's a small change in click-through rate that I've seen. Nothing like groundbreaking, but there is a difference, which means that there's probably a difference in organic results also. So I'd venture to say choose a domain name that is more informative to what it is that you're offering or that you're doing to help increase your click-through rate. And the way that the website looks, like following the best practices that we have, should convert exactly the same regardless of what the domain name is. But you want the best chance to get a click.
Absolutely. No, I agree with that. I mean, having a good domain name that's related to your business, absolutely. Especially like with when designing the ad, you can, if you have, you know, the keyword in the domain name itself, you can have like the paths for, you know, cash offer and then maybe a city name after your domain. So it does help with click-through rates and kind of seeing a little bit more of like, okay, this, exactly like you said, like, you know, if you have a domain that you're, you know, trying to advertise and it's like, I'm Mr. Cheesehead, and then you're trying to actually like sell homes. I mean, that's not going to drive it home every time.
Unless you're in Wisconsin.
Yeah, true. Exactly. Probably get it down over there in Wisconsin.
I think the other counterpoint though to this is branding also.
Yeah.
So if you take Apple, for example, it's not a fruit company like Forrest Gump would have you think. It is a company that makes tech.
Yeah.
But it's successful and synonymous with tech because of the branding initiative that they have, because they put out a product that's worth people's time to think about and talk about, whether it's good or bad. And I think if you have a good branding strategy, you can also make a non-related domain name or business name work for you.
Right.
But it requires that outside factor of branding, of having a completely separate branding strategy in your business to make that work, and something that's actually getting in front of people enough times to have them remember it and think about it when they need a specific thing that has to do with that. If I was a house buying company that had the domain name Sweater Weather, I would have to do a whole lot of work to get something like that to trend in the local community that I'm trying to buy houses in. Yeah. But if it's more along the lines of like what We Buy Houses has done, then whenever you think of needing to sell a house, those words We Buy Houses kind of pop into your head. So you look for We Buy Houses people or We Buy Houses companies. And then you see all of the pay-per-click ads, the organic results and stuff pop up. But that's, if you have a good branding strategy, you can overcome using a business name as your domain name or as the main name for what it is that you're offering. But it requires a lot of additional resources versus most people who are using pay-per-click or jumping online to get leads, who are just getting started or who are smaller and trying to keep things in their business really lean. You probably want to skew more towards being specific with your industry and trying to inform the customer that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I this is kind of getting away from our main topic, but I think it brings up a really, really good point too, that branding is a big piece to the puzzle, but when starting out, it's more of an 80-20 kind of spread, because
yeah, definitely,
it's something you can get involved with, but you know, like Josh mentioned, if you're trying to drive, you know, motivated sellers to Sweater Weather, you're going to have it's going to be an uphill battle for a while. Not to say it won't work, but it will take a lot of different initiatives and time to kind of get that synonymous with you know, whatever you're trying to offer as a solution to the customers. And actually, it kind of brings us up into our next question, which is there a big difference in performance between template-based sites and ones that you build or have built on your own?
I think the difference really comes down to what you'd prefer to save, time or money. With a custom-built site, you're responsible for maintaining the SEO, for keeping it up to date with any platform updates, and fixing anything that breaks. 100% of the customers that I work with don't have any time for that. So they go template-based. You'll pay 4 to 5 times as much for using a template-based service, but it ends up saving you tons of time and keeps you from having to even make an additional hire to have somebody take care of that stuff for you in-house. Now, if you're scaling up to be a huge business and maybe you're going to have different marketing strategies that are online or tech-based, then you might hire that person. But for most smaller businesses, 1, 2, 3-person operations, hiring somebody specifically for that doesn't make a lot of sense. You can get a great product either way. You just have to weigh out the cost benefits analysis of it and see if you'd rather spend more money to have something that you don't have to mess with, or if you'd rather spend the time and end up saving the money on it. And we're talking like $30 or $40 a month difference in hosting. But typically, if you have somebody build a site for you, there's an upfront cost of like, could be anywhere from hundreds to thousands of dollars to get something completely custom made for you. And then you have to pay for the hosting for it, which might be like between 10 and 20 bucks a month. And then there's the time that goes along with having to manage that site at that point. So there's a lot of things to consider. Honestly, I go template based as often as possible, just because I would rather spend the money and save the time, because that time is much more, it has much more value being spent on other tasks that I do day to day versus having to mess with a website and hosting.
Yeah, same here. I'd say 98% of my customers I work with use templates in one way or another. I'd say the latter 2% use websites that are designed literally off a templated design. It's, you know, it's informative to kind of know these things going into it, because websites have become so much easier to have like hosted and built ready to play out of the box, which is huge. The coding infrastructure behind the scenes has become more and more stable too. So it allows analysts like Josh and I to kind of seamlessly, you know, implement code or, you know, make suggestions for a change very fast. And speed is something that is really crucial when doing PC, and especially on any platform that you're going to be doing that on. So the coding infrastructure behind them is fantastic. They're really robust. They stay up to date with a lot of the you know, with the updates, with the plugins that they're using, and for the most part, they allow for really clean integration from third-party platforms. Like when you're trying to track a lead, or if you want to have something put on the page specifically, it allows for that really seamlessly. So it's a good fit for most agencies that and customers that I work with. So yeah, absolutely. So to summarize and close today's podcast, what we went over today was some of the things that make up a great converting website. We also went over how we felt about squeeze pages and the effectiveness of websites in general and how to drive traffic to those. We kind of went off on a tangent on what's involved with that. But I think you will receive a lot of good information from this podcast, because we went pretty deep into what has driven conversion for our customers. But that concludes today's podcast. Josh, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, everybody have a great rest of the week, a great weekend. Tune in for next week's episode. That'll be the season finale for this first season of the Pay-Per-Click podcast. And maybe tune in for water cooler talk once that gets off the ground.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Paperclip Podcast. Remember to like, share, and subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you're getting a lot out of the show, leave us a 5-star review too. We'll catch you on the next episode.